Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. Today, I have the privilege of sitting down with Stacy. Using IVF, Stacy and her husband brought healthy twin girls into the world 14 years ago. And after following the work of the Center for Bioethics and Culture for some time, Stacy reached out to us with hopes of sharing her story with other listeners. Despite their successful textbook IVF success story, Stacy and her husband are able to see in hindsight just how much they were used, lied to, and profited off of during their struggle with infertility. The procedure, although successful, has had lasting negative effects on her family, both emotionally and physically. So today, Stacy's here to share her personal story in hopes of dissuading others from finding themselves caught up in what Stacy calls a predatory industry, preying upon the emotionally and physically vulnerable. Stacy now lives in Washington with her husband and four daughters. So thank you so much for taking time away from your duties at home and busy lives to share your story on Venus Rising.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So we're just going to kind of dive right in. We know at the Center for Bioethics and Culture that people use assisted reproduction for a myriad of reasons. For you, though, it seems that you and your husband struggled with infertility. So do you mind kind of starting there, sharing your initial diagnosis and treatment and why you ultimately went through with IVF?
Yeah. So basically, we didn't prevent having kids when we first got married, but we didn't want to have a family right away. But after about a year and a half of not preventing anything and still not being pregnant, we were coming to the point of saying, I think we're ready to start a family. And so we started to look into just sort of regular doctor's visit, ask questions of, should we be expecting things to happen or is there anything wrong? And at that point, our doctor just said, you know, keep trying for a little while. After another few months of charting cycles and trying in those ways, nothing was happening. Had another appointment. And at that point, I was also diagnosed. I'd had some abdominal pain over, you know, always painful cycles, but it was more intense as the years went on. So I was actually diagnosed with endometriosis. And at that point, my OBGYN referred me to an abdominal surgeon who would actually operate and do some excisions on the endometriosis. She suggested that that would probably be really helpful in conceiving. And at that point, we went ahead and had that surgery as a laparoscopic surgery. He did quite a lot of cleaning out, as he said. So I actually felt a lot better after the surgery, but it was not successful in allowing us to conceive. So he was also an OBGYN, so I continued under his care at that point. He recommended that we do a few rounds of Clomid, and that's the drug that stimulates the ovaries to kind of overproduce in hopes that there's more targets to hit every month, so to speak. So we did a couple of rounds of Clomid. That was not successful. Then he suggested we move on to an IUI, which is an intrauterine injection of sperm. And at this point, the process of trying to conceive was no longer exciting. We're several months into this process. We're feeling really overwhelmed and frustrated. And each procedure that you have to go through in this process is more and more demoralizing because it's so invasive and it's so seemingly unnatural and strange. And so the longer that you have to go through these procedures, just it just wears on you emotionally as well as physically. And it also, frankly, takes a toll on the marriage because it's should be such an intimate process. And now you have doctors and nurses and everything engaged. So we did a round, I believe two rounds of IUI, not successful. And our doctor wanted to continue going. And at this point, I was getting really frustrated. And so I decided that I wanted to get a second opinion. So we went to another clinic. We live north of Seattle. So we went downtown to a larger fertility clinic in Seattle. And granted, at this point, there had been really no investigation as to the root cause of our infertility. It was just that we were having trouble conceiving, and here are the processes that we had tried. So when I came to the infertility clinic in Seattle, I kind of expected a little bit more of an investigation into why we found ourselves in this place. I went by myself to that first appointment, and I was basically told at 28 years old that I would never have children on my own because I have endometriosis. And at the only, and this was my first visit, the only option for me at this point was to pursue IVF.
So your husband's fertility or virality, like your husband was never, it was just you.
Yeah. So at the previous clinic, when they were doing the IUI, they do examine the donation and they test for motility and they test for sperm formation and things like that. He was within the range of normal on all of those things. So the problem likely lied with me. So we did know that, but there was no more investigation into the root cause on my end.
Sure. You mentioned just kind of the emotional and mental toll of kind of going through these procedures. And I just can't imagine too, also knowing, you know, feeling like at fault, even though you're not, right? When you're in a marriage and you're like, hey, we're trying, it takes two to create life. And now one of us is at fault, even though you don't want to use those words and you don't want, you know, I can't imagine the toll that it does have. And I've heard and I've read stories. And I don't think that we do a good job of preparing couples or folks for the mental toll of signing up for these types of interventions.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things too, where it's not something you have conversations with, you know, you go in for any kind of medical procedure that's common to people and, oh, I had, you know, my wisdom teeth taken out, or here's my story, here's my, but when it comes to fertility issues, it's so private and it's so something you feel so much, I wouldn't say, I would say borderline shame, like you mentioned, what's wrong with me? Or, you know, and this is, I always wanted to grow up and be a mom and raise a family. So for me, this was the most wonderful thing I could do in life and my dream. And to have that be told to me from a really high, highly known fertility specialist in Seattle that my only option was IVF, it was terrifying. And also just completely crushing, because I thought it was out of left field. Yeah, I did not expect it. So, and I was so young, I was 28.
Yeah, really young. I have a couple follow-up questions then. So when you were on Clomid and the IUI, were the risks, did you feel like you kind of knew what to expect and that you were kind of told the risks and what could happen? And then my second question is, when you were told about IVF, did you feel like you knew anything about, like, how did you feel when you heard that news? Did they kind of talk you through what to expect in that regard, risks, benefits, et cetera, options?
Yeah, you know, it was at the first clinic where we had the Clomid and the IUI, there was shockingly little discussed about the risks. There was, you know, you always get the drug pamphlet that you read before you take the medication or the injection or whatever it is. So I'm certain that somewhere in the fine print, there was some talk about the risk of ovarian hyperstimulation with Clomid, but it was never talked about. It was just, here is the next thing that you do if you want to get pregnant. And our doctor was, he was cautious in that he would not do more than two rounds of Clomid before moving on. So I respect that, but there was no talk of any potential risks or side effects. And then in terms of at the IVF clinic or the fertility clinic in Seattle, there was extremely little discussed about any risk at all. The process was described in a very sequential form. You know, here's what you do and then next, and here's kind of, they really spell it out to you even with a calendar. Here's exactly how it will happen. Wow. But nowhere along the way was it, did I feel like there was any other option? at all, or B, that there was any real risk involved with any of these cascading steps towards the final IVF process.
Mm-hmm. In your email, I just want to pause. When we talked, you also talked about the language a little bit and how it kind of disassociates the process from the goal of like having a baby, having it kind of takes the humanness out of it all.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that before we continue, and then we'll continue on your story?
Sure. You know, one of the other aspects of this entire process, and I'm a Christian, so I'm a person of faith, but so I speak especially to people of faith. I went into this entire process believing that every embryo is a unique human being. And yet it's almost impossible to go through this superhighway of fertility without it really changing your view. Not your view as in what your beliefs are, but what you're willing to do in this process, even the language surrounding everything. So for example, you know, you talk about the process of donation for IUI instead of what that, you know, really is. And it's dehumanizing for the husband. It's not how conception is meant to be, obviously. And then for the woman, you talk about, you know, eggs and sperm, but then you also start talking about embryos and blastocysts and fetus. You change the definition. And so you really disassociate with the humanness of this entire process, and you become more clinical in the approach to it, which obviously it is a medical procedure, but as a mother and as a human, it puts you in a different mindset of what you're willing to undergo, what you're willing to consider, and even how you consider these unique individual human beings. And I think looking back, that's the thing that I'm most shocked with myself at, of how I viewed things when I was caught in that process, that with hindsight, this is one of the reasons why I want to say this, to save someone else from having to answer those questions and having to have that shift in humanity in this process.
Yeah. And we have listeners of all different backgrounds, religious or not. And I think though we can agree on the humanness of it. That's, you know, our tagline is, you know, to protect our human future. So, I think that's an important point regardless of your background. And I appreciate you, talking about that. So let's continue on if you don't mind. Talk to us now. So you went to your appointment, they told you, I'm sure you went home and discussed with your husband what kind of happened next.
Yeah. So one of the aspects too, that I'll introduce in our story is that, he had quite good medical insurance at his company at the time. This was a harm. And this is one of the other aspects of this entire industry that I think if people did not have access to the medical insurance that covers IVF, it would keep a lot of people out of this process. But because a lot of companies offer this as a benefit, it just seems like the next logical thing to do. So after coming home from the appointment that day and kind of downloading it with my husband and talking about it, his company allowed for 3 IVF cycle attempts. So it was not a complete 100% coverage, but it significantly afforded us the ability to pursue this. So once we decided, based on it's interesting sitting in the office after months of infertility, hearing from this well-known doctor that this is my only option, I didn't even think that I had another option. I didn't even think that there was time to wait, because you're told IVF is a numbers game and you might have to try several cycles. And here we've been waiting for so long to have children. So we basically started right away in the IVF process. We came in, both of us, for an initial meeting with the staff. It's kind of like a team meeting because there's your fertility doctor and the embryologist and all these different professionals in the system. And they just kind of lay it out for you. Here's your path. You have a different protocol depending on your age and your fertility needs. And so I was on what was called a long Lupron protocol. And it's really scheduled out by the day. You have this medication on this day and blood tests on this day. And then here, if we get to the end of it, hopefully you'll be pregnant. And that's kind of how the process gets started.
Wow. And you had just one, you were able to do one cycle, mm-hmm. and you were pregnant with twins. A lot of people don't realize that having multiples puts you in a higher risk category. So were you, how many embryos did they implant? And were you aware of the risk? Did you have any risk? What was your pregnancy like?
Yeah. So I will say that the clinic was very respectful of our wishes. So we knew with our belief that each embryo was a baby of ours. We wanted to limit the number of eggs that were attempted to be fertilized, because we figured if each one survived and each one became a child, how many kids do we want to have? Basically, we worked backwards. But with IVF, it is such a numbers game, because not every egg that's fertilized becomes an embryo or can be frozen to become a blastocyst. So we figured no more than 10 eggs. So they did the egg retrieval and discovered that part of my problem was half of the egg follicles did not have an egg in them. So that was part of my fertility issue. I don't always ovulate an egg each time. They attempted to fertilize 9 eggs, 8 fertilized. And you're in touch with the clinic on a daily basis at that point. Let me back up really quickly about the medication too. The medication for IVF is completely insane. I remember I actually have a picture of all of it. It was like $4,000 out of pocket. And there's, I don't even remember all the names of the medications, but you basically give yourself a daily injection. Something I'd never done before. I was given 5 minutes instruction here with an orange. Here's how you do it. And now go home and inject yourself twice a day for a month. I was never told that Lupron was not approved for IVF. I was never told that any of this medication was off-label use. I don't know, honestly, if it would have made a difference to me at the time. I was so in that mindset. However, it was never mentioned at all. There were no risks told to me of ovarian hyperstimulation at this point, especially with the egg retrieval. The risks were not even mentioned, or if they were mentioned, they were so minimized based on, well, if you want a baby, this is what you have to do. And so it just is this completely, almost, I would say, emotional manipulation, because you just don't have a chance to pause. Anyway, so we're going through the process. We get to day 3. So we have embryos. We have 5 embryos. Of the 9 eggs, 8 were attempted to fertilize. 5 embryos took. I'm sorry, 5 embryos became. What happens after day 3 is that the embryos started to fracture, which means that they weren't sure if they were going to be healthy embryos or not. And they recommended transfer on day 3. Sometimes if you can wait till day 5, you end up with a better chance of a baby, because a blastocyst is stronger than an embryo at that stage. So they called us in. They said, we recommend transfer today. Okay, so we go down to the hospital and we're sitting there, and they give us about an hour to decide how many embryos we're going to transfer. And they tell us that you have a high likelihood that all the embryos will die because of how they're starting to fracture. Tell us how many you want to have transferred. So my husband and I are sitting there, you know, we have no idea. We've never had children before. I've never been pregnant before. I have no idea how many to transfer. I figured that we could probably handle twins. But knowing, again, coming back to this strange numbers game, you're expecting that some of these embryos are going to die. So how many do you transfer to end up pregnant at the end? If you want one, do you start with 3? Do you start with 2? So in the end, we decided to transfer 3 embryos. Again, looking back, I can't believe that we did. But again, that's what we decided. And then we found out 2 weeks later that we were pregnant with twins, right? Maybe 3 weeks later when they did the ultrasound and found we were pregnant with twins. The transfer, the whole retrieval and transfer processes, those went fairly well. I handled them fairly well. My pregnancy was very smooth up until 30 weeks. And this is when the cascade kind of interventions kind of came back to bite us. Mm-hmm. So, let me pause for a moment. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to go through what happened during my pregnancy with the hyperstimulation at this point?
Yeah, I think that's good. I'm going to ask you too in a minute what you did with the other 2 embryos. Is that an okay question?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay.
So, Yeah. So why don't you, so you just said the cascade of intervention started. So you go ahead and then when we get to a pause, I'll ask. But
okay. Okay. I found out that I was pregnant with twins. And at this point, I had two separate placentas. So we knew they were not identical twins. Sometimes identical twins happen more often with IVF. And so they were watching me because we knew there were two girls at this point. One of them looked like she was struggling with growth. So I was at the doctor's office fairly regularly being monitored for her growth. And to make a long story short, I did not realize I was having contractions every minute. They were monitoring me and said, oh, you're contracting every minute. Couldn't feel them. So we were checked into the hospital to stop labor. I was 30 weeks at this point. And it really was a godsend because they were able to stop the labor. And at this time, my husband and I thought, well, we can just hang out in the hospital all weekend and just watch shows, whatever, you know, have a break. So this was on a Friday. On a Saturday night, I was sitting in the bed and I look over to my husband and I said, Ryan, I just don't feel very well. And within a half an hour, I was vomiting from pain. I had just felt kind of a little like, I don't even know what it was, like a stomach cramp, and I don't feel very good. 24 hours later, I was rushed into emergency surgery, maybe a little more than 24 hours. They had tried to do an MRI. They had tried to do CT, all the things. They had pumped me full of pain medication. I actually don't remember this period of time because my mind has blocked it out. I was in such great level of pain. Finally, they decided they had to do exploratory surgery on a woman who was 30 weeks pregnant with twins. I was huge at 30 weeks. The general surgeon at the hospital would not touch me. He said, I'm not taking that risk. And my doctor said, well, I can't give her any more pain medication. We have got to investigate. So investigative surgery at that point discovered that I had an ovarian torsion. And what that is basically where your ovary kind of flips over and twists with your fallopian tube like a twist tie on a bag of bread. But what can happen with that is that the ovary dies, it can get gangrene, you can become septic, and you can die from it. And it's excruciatingly painful, excruciating so much it makes you black out or not remember a few days. So they, at that point, removed the ovary and the fallopian tube. And then they tucked the twins back in, sewed me up, and I was on bed rest for the next 4 weeks with a baby kicking at my incision from the inside. That was really fun.
And one less ovary now.
Yes, and one less
ovary. That's an important thing to just kind of...
Yes. Yeah.
Your story will continue, but we're down an ovary at this point.
Yes, down an ovary. Wow. And a major abdominal surgery with three people at risk at this point.
Right. Right. And what do you think caused, or do you know the cause?
It was a large cyst. It was a hyperstimulation of the ovary. So it was from the medication. Now it could have been also a complication from the egg retrieval because at that point they did excise all of the ovarian follicles, but it could have been scar tissue from that. It could have been a cyst that developed, but it was the hyperstimulation. And so I was able to recover okay from that surgery, but I was exposed to incredible levels of medication and what my twins were as well in utero. I was on severe muscle relaxants for a couple of weeks to keep me from going back into labor because I was only 30 weeks pregnant at this time. And finally got checked out of the hospital, bed rest at home at 34 weeks. They basically say, okay, we're not going to make you have bed rest anymore. We still would love for you to be pregnant a few more weeks, but if you know, you can get up and move around. So actually I felt really good at that point, healed from the surgery. And then at 36 weeks, I went in for a regular weekly check at that point, found out that one of the girls had very little amniotic fluid left and had an emergency delivery that day. And it was New Year's Eve, so it was a very big party, and delivered two healthy little girls, very little, 4 pounds and 5 pounds. And so the C-section was a breeze compared with the other surgery. So that was kind of a nice surprise.
And everything you've been through, and it seems it really does, like I'm just hearing over and over just how pressured you felt. And it sounds like, honestly, your story, you and your husband actually had a lot of foresight. You talked a lot about this and about the things before they happened, which yes. I find that a lot of couples don't do because they yeah. honestly don't know what to think about. They don't, yeah. you know, they've never yeah. done this. They don't talk about it with their friends. We don't talk about it enough. Yeah. And honestly, big fertility is just given the green light to do anything so they can offer anything. And so I think you and your husband, it sounds like, had thought some of this through. And so that's good. But it does, it seems like, and once you've started, not only is it a numbers game, but like you said, you don't have a day to stop because if you miss this schedule, then you have to wait a whole new cycle and then you've got to worry about paying for it and then going back through. So it does very much feel kind of like a cyclone or vortex. But did yeah. you and your husband discuss, so you said you implanted 3 embryos. Did you discuss what you would do with the other 2 or what? Yes.
So we had determined that if we had any embryos remaining that survived, we would freeze them and then be responsible to transfer them in later years when we were ready to have more children. So in our case, we did the transfer on day 3, but an embryo starts to produce its own DNA on day 3. So up until that point, it's still living on the parent cell's DNA. But on day 4 is when it's kind of the true test of an embryo, and all of our other embryos did not make it on that day. Okay. So we did not have any embryos left to freeze. And if I can segue for just a moment on that topic, you know, over the years past IVF, looking back, there are some things that shock me with the fact that we actually participated in this. And one of them is just that, you know, this left to freeze, not left to freeze. We have no idea what our life is going to bring. And the fact that we were willing to have embryos left over to freeze, you know, I personally had a friend who also went through IVF, and she and her husband had twins. And about a week after her twins were born, she had to have an emergency hysterectomy. So, you know, she had no uterus left at that point. So if that would have been a situation like ours, we would have been stuck. What would we have done with those embryos left over on ice? Mm-hmm. We would have had to have been forced into an entire new series of interventions or procedures that we didn't ever entertain the idea of when we just thought about wanting to have children. And so I think that, you know, when you're in the moment, it seems normal and natural because it's the world that you're immersed in at that time. And you're so desirous of having a baby and you're so eager to get past all this medical stuff, to just hold that baby in your arms. And because of that, you really are not thinking clearly. And also all the medication involved, it really takes its toll on I think your ability to think rationally. You're additionally vulnerable at that point.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel especially like hormonal or a lot of side effects on the medication during your IVF cycle?
Yeah, you know, interestingly, I felt okay on the medication during the cycle. However, the next part of our story is the next really detrimental part of IVF was that I had severe postpartum depression after I gave birth to the twins. You mentioned earlier about the additional risks that come from a multiple pregnancy. That was never something that was told to me. It was just told to me as, well, you know, it'll be harder to have twins. Mm-hmm. But I never knew about the other risks involved. For example, I weighed less when I gave birth than before I had gotten pregnant. The girls just took all they needed. And I'm glad they did. But I was very unhealthy after I gave birth. Added to that fact was all of these medications that had been coursing through my body previous to getting pregnant, in the surgery, after the surgery. I had to have an emergency C-section. So that was an intervention that I did not expect. Knowing I had twins, I was a little more prepared that might be a possibility because twins and one of the babies was breech. So it would have been likely either way. But still, you know, all of this series of physical interventions really take its toll. And in my case, the postpartum depression, and I don't want to get into why at this moment, but what happened was it was a difficult depression to diagnose with the doctor I was going to at the time. So I suffered for 2 years with tremendous postpartum depression that was undiagnosed, and I had no help. And on that score, I should have been on medication of some kind or counseling or something. But my doctor did not diagnose it, and it was incredible suffering for that period of time.
Yeah. And unfortunately, 14 years ago, I don't think I'm a perinatal nurse, so I'm a little bit experienced in this regard, but I don't think 14 years ago we were treating it very well anyway. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that we finally have really started to take seriously.
Yeah.
And so I'm really sorry to hear that you had to go through that. And it breaks my heart because you think about wanting these babies for so long and being so excited and then feeling in a way that you can't help upset.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just getting emotional a little bit because I see it at work and I've seen it in life, and I just know what a toll it can have on someone and bonding with your kiddos and feeling well and your relationship with your husband. And then also you have the outward, you know, you've worked so hard, right? You guys have put so much energy into the creation of these girls, and now they're here. And I just can't imagine how you felt and how.
Well, and for being, you know, this is my life's dream, is to have babies and to feel like a complete monster. And you can't talk to people about that, or at least you didn't feel like you could open up to the full depths of what you're experiencing. So, you know, my husband is amazing. And I look back now and I just have even more admiration for what he endured at the time, you know, having twin newborns, but then also really walking with me through this unfathomable emotional and mental pain that was really unnecessary. And, you know, I think as a Christian, I believe these things, we go through our life for a reason. But again, this is one of the reasons I wanted to come on here today to hopefully encourage someone else that may be facing the same thing, or to help someone else avoid some of these things that we had to go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's start there then with my next question. So in an email to me, you had talked very explicitly several reasons, and some of those you've already hit on why you don't recommend this. So if you want to just kind of highlight those so that someone listening can be like, oh, you know, like I said, you have hit on a couple of those. And then also, what would you say to explicitly, let's say there's a woman listening right now who's at 28. Yeah. What would you say to her? What route would you suggest? You know, you're not a physician, you're not giving medical advice, but as from mom to wannabe mom, what would you say to her?
Yeah. Well, to your first question on why we've actually met with several couples and talked to them kind of out of going through IVF. And I think, in addition to just the elements of my story that I've already told, I think it is such a predatory industry. You're taking so advantage of these medical interventions that are told to you that are essential. May not be. They may be. I mean, there may be situations where someone has genuinely no other option. But based on our experience, and then that I've been able to get pregnant actually three times since IVF. We did lose one baby, but I have four healthy girls now. And, you know, what they told us was a lie. They told us that we could not conceive any other way. They told us that I would not be able to conceive at all, that we could never have children. And they have no basis for saying that. They did no medical test to have any grounds to stand on to tell me that. At the time, I don't know why I didn't question it. But again, I, you know, looking back, why didn't I get a second opinion on that? But this was the solution I was looking for. Okay. What would I say to a young woman now? First of all, I would say, I am so sorry, because infertility is a private hell. it is such a natural human experience to want to have children. And when you can't, it is one of the most essential things in life that you feel is out of your grasp. And I'm so sorry for your pain. I would encourage someone to first and foremost become a healthy person mentally and physically. There are so many ways, you know, if you go with Western medicine or natural medicine or any kind of, but become a healthy person. Make sure your hormone levels are right. My hormone levels were never tested. They tested for estrogen. They tested for progesterone. They did not test thyroid. They did not test, you know, my vitamin levels and all of these iron levels, all the things that go into being able to conceive were never tested. So I would say, be sure to become a healthy person. Have your spouse become a healthy person. Make sure that your bodies are in the best state possible. I would say also to enjoy your marriage, because fertility makes intimacy another level of hell. Because instead of just connecting with your spouse, it's always about, are we going to be able to conceive? It's awful. So as much as possible, try to just connect as a couple and become a healthy person. And I think 9 times out of 10, that's probably going to be the answer that you need. In hindsight, I was hypothyroid and I did not know it. My hormones were a mess. So after I had the twins and after a few years of still not feeling well, I found a naturopath who helped me to balance out my hormones. It was not, with our third daughter, it was not easy to conceive, but she was conceived naturally. And then our fourth was a surprise when I was 37. So, you know, of all the humorous things, to have a surprise pregnancy at 37 was a really fun one. And she's a delightful girl. And
That's amazing. And on one ovary, I just, you know, yes. Like,
yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And also, no postpartum depression. And no, I did end up having to have two other C-sections, which, you know, I went to some natural hospitals in Seattle and I tried to VBAC, but my body just held on to the babies for too long and I never went. So that was, you know, a negative in a sense, but they were healthy C-sections and recovered fine. But no postpartum depression. I was very afraid of that with my third daughter after my experience with my twins. And it was a delightful experience having the other two. So I'd just say to that 28-year-old, you know, the story is not over. Take time to get second and third opinions if you need to. You feel like it's never going to happen and it will, but just take the time you need and ask lots and lots of questions and get lots and lots of good wisdom before proceeding with anything on the medical side.
Yeah. It's interesting. Jennifer and I did a study that's now published on surrogate mothers in the United States. So not your situation, but still taking hormones. And those women in our study, we saw higher rates of postpartum depression as well, which we were thinking, you know, home, you know, empty arms, full breasts, no babies, postpartum. But I also, you know, there's the medication level that I'm just kind of, my wheels are spinning a little bit talking to you, that they were taking medication to become, you know, to prepare the womb, so to speak. So really interesting, this mental health and how pregnancy plays into our mental health. So what about, do you think now, some studies are coming out, kids that were born through IVF might be at higher risk for cardiovascular disease, et cetera. What do you think about now that your daughters are growing up? Do you have concerns? Are you?
Yeah. You know, I've thought about that. You know, when you have multiple kids, you always are kind of, especially if they're the same gender, you're kind of comparing, oh, are you taller or shorter? Or, you know, very unique genetically. You can't help but do it. But it's interesting. My twins are very petite and they've always been small since they were born. And my younger girls were born full term singletons. So that makes a difference. But I do wonder, you know, will there be any lasting effects for them? Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I've thought about when you conceive through IVF, the egg and the sperm are in a petri dish together. So I've often wondered, are we getting the best embryo possible? In nature, the embryo kind of has to be the best quality to meet and survive. And so I often wonder, well, are some of these side effects later in life simply because maybe it's not the healthiest egg and sperm that are meeting. I've wondered about that. So far, I haven't seen anything that's been an actual negative medical diagnosis, but I do wonder how their lives will be different than my two that were conceived naturally. And I also wanted to cycle back on one other thing that thing kind of haunts me about the IVF process is that we don't really actually know how many embryos we had. They told us we had 8. we don't really actually know what happened to the others. They told us that they didn't live. We don't know. And I think that's the part that haunts me as a mother, of just going, I hope that they were telling us the truth.
Yeah.
But in an industry that was comfortable to lie to us with other things. And I know that I have had friends who have gone through IVF who have been lied to significantly. It's a huge caution and honestly a pain point in going, I hope I did the best that was possible for all my embryos. I don't know, and I'll never know. So I think that's something to be wary of with this industry is, are they truthful?
Yeah, that's a shame. You know, it's it breaks my heart, again, being in labor and delivery and the joys that that job brings. Mm. It breaks my heart that there are people that go into this industry, and it is a money-making industry. Hospitals are money-making industries. Yes. But it breaks my heart that at the root of this, some of these clinics are just kind of evil. They let money run the show and forget about the people that they're taking care of. Anyway, I have one more question. We're running out of time.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned the hindrance, actually, that insurance was, and that it was paying for your cycles. Are you aware of the new legislation that's the Right to Build a Family of 2022? It's this new law that they are, that we've just started seeing, and we're writing some articles on to educate our followers and listeners. But basically, it's a law that's going to pretty much allow whatever. Insurance can't, you know, insurance must provide care for all types of treatments, from IVF to surrogacy. And so just wonder if you're aware of that, if you've read anything on it, if you have any thoughts on it.
Oh, I've heard of it. I haven't read any specific things on it, but it's terrible, because I think not being able to afford something, you have to look for other options. And if insurance automatically affords people, there will only be further commodification of our human experience, because the more insurance tries, you get, you're not going to be as careful. Even if you pursue IVF or assisted reproductive technologies, you're not going to do it with as much care if you know there's kind of no limit on the tries you get. Also, I could see it really leading to, you know, one of the things we absolutely would not do was do any kind of embryo testing in terms of health. Mm-hmm. We had refused to do that because we don't believe that that's moral. But I could see that easily becoming a means of tossing out imperfect humans, because why not? You get a lot of tries. You commodify the baby, you commodify the process, and you're going to destroy a lot of women and marriages in the process, because it's a ruthless, painful procedure, and it pays no attention to the individual, to the woman, to the person who is this vulnerable, kind of wide-eyed, vulnerable, scared person who just wants to have a baby. It's a terrible person to take advantage of.
Wow.
Yeah.
You say a lot there in that last bit. It's like a 1-2 punch. Like, I'm like, hey, yes. So we'll end there, but I thank you. It is a commodification of the woman, of her womb, of the children. So thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you so much for taking time out of your day to chat with me and share your very personal story on Venus Rising. I'll encourage anyone at this moment who might be listening, you can reach out to me at callie.fell@cbc-network.org. You can share your story with us. If you'd like to come on Venus Rising, that'd be great. But I think we need to talk about these issues. That's why this platform exists. That's why this podcast exists, is to talk about women's issues. And this is one of them, and we don't talk about it enough. So thank you, Stacey, so much for being vulnerable and coming on our show.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure. An honor to be here. Thank you.
Yes, of course. I'd also like to thank each and every listener for subscribing and tuning in. Our goal, as ever, is to create conversation, facilitate discussion, and encourage you all to think beyond the masses.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.